This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
In victory or defeat, true fans never quit. Champions are made by the fans. That's why 5-Hour Energy is adding a new limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy Shot to their roster. Fuel your team's spirit with a taste as sweet as an overtime win. Packed with an all-star lineup of B vitamins, nutrients, and 230 milligrams of caffeine, it keeps you feeling energized, loud, and proud all game long. Check out 5hourenergy.com to grab your Stand the Fan shot today.
Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's Hour 3, G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Cowboys getting set to visit the Commanders on Sunday afternoon, and Nick Harris, Star Telegram, joins us now here on The Fan to talk more about it. A good afternoon, Nick. How the heck are you?
Yeah, what's going on, guys? How are y'all?
We're doing well, thanks. And these Cowboys starting to get a little healthier. How many reinforcements they getting this week, and how much do you think they'll help?
Yeah, there's a possibility that at least a couple of these multiple IR guys will be able to come off. The two guys that I'm looking at specifically are Brandon Cooks and Marshawn Nealon. As long as they stay on track going into tomorrow's practice, you know, McCarthy likes the Saturday practice to determine what availability could look like on Sunday. As long as everything comes out of those two practices or out of that practice tomorrow, then I think those two should be able to go on Sunday. But it's also about finding those roster spots. Obviously, they'll be able to find one with putting Marquise Bell on the IR, and then it would be about figuring out the other one. But as long as they can figure out the roster maneuvering, I think both of those guys have a shot to go on Sunday. And then De'Ron Bland, he'll be making his season debut on Sunday with the injury report coming out. He was not designated, so it looks like he'll be on the field ready to go.
Yeah, that's exciting. What are your expectations for De'Ron Bland? It's like we've never gotten to see him in Diggs since both of them have been record holders.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think we only got two games last year before Diggs got hurt. But, yeah, it'll be really good. And I think – you know, there was a specific point in the game last week where Josh Butler on a third down, he had a pass breakup where he didn't necessarily turn his head around in time to look at the ball. And had he, I think it could have been a pick six that could have made it a 20-17 game. And I think if you look at little instances like that, there's been a couple of those throughout the season that if you had De'Ron Bland on the field, then maybe you get a score out of that. So I think he'll be able to bring that ball hawking ability back to the secondary, a secondary that is badly needed, an ability to force turnovers. Obviously, it'll be a huge help him coming back.
Do you have any reason to believe we'll get a more Trey Lance packages on Sunday?
I mean, it would make sense, right? As far as if I believe it'll happen, I don't know. I feel like, you know, talking into the void sometimes. But I think it makes sense against this defense, 30th and rush defense this season and 31st in yards per carry allowed. It would make sense to integrate Trey Lance a little bit more, but we'll see it as the game goes on. You know, Jerry and Mike McCarthy have said time and time again that they feel like Cooper Rush gives them the best chance to win. And I agree, but I also think that getting Trey Lance involved more than he has been also gives them a pretty good chance to win. So I think we'll see as the game goes on.
How much do you think maybe the Jones family and Will McClay look across the other side and they have any regrets over how this offseason went, where it's like, damn, there's kind of where all your depth is on that defense for Washington?
Yeah, I think especially if you look at a guy like Dante Fowler, right? He's already played more snaps this year than he did all of last year for Dallas. And granted, Dallas's edge group was really talented last year, and they were healthier than they were this year. But, I mean, looking at the time that he's had, he's on a Pro Bowl pace with 8.5 sacks through these 11 games that Washington has played. And you factor in Dorrance Armstrong, not only in his ability to rush the passer, but also defend the run. Yeah, I'm sure it's tough looking at those guys and maybe seeing that they certainly could have started this year at times whenever Micah and DeMarcus Lawrence were both out.
It's Nick Harris, Star Telegram, here with you in the G-Bag Nation. Any reason to believe this could be the game where they start to emerge from rock bottom, or is that going to happen in what's left of the season?
You know, I think getting some of these guys back from injured reserve certainly should provide a boost. I mean, you look at a veteran like Brandon Cooks and his ability to just add some sort of spark to this offense. I think there's a potential there. You look on the defensive side, Marshawn Nealand, he was really starting to put it together in his rookie season before he got hurt. So if he can get his feet back under him, that'll obviously help out the pass rush. That'll help out the rush defense. And Deron Bland, we talked about the takeaway ability there. It only should get better when you return players like that. But it's also about how much intention is being put on the field. And, you know, I'll give the team this credit. You know, they are 3-7. Objectively, it's been a bad team, but these guys are still fighting late into games, and it's typically about fourth quarter where some of these games are starting to, you know, get carried away, whereas before the bye, it felt like some of these games were getting away in the second quarter. So if you're looking for any sort of positive trajectory, maybe that's where you find it.
But you don't see any give up?
I don't. I really don't. And I think these guys are playing for these coaches, and that's something that I'm really keeping an eye on as the season continues on, because if you see that not happening, then I think that's where we start to look around and be like, okay, so what is everyone getting out of this coaching staff right now? And I don't see that right now. I see guys that are playing for these coaches. You know, you see a moment earlier in the week when John Fossil is just asked about Marquise Bell and his impact to his unit, and he starts to tear up and fights back emotions. I mean, that is a big reason why these guys are still continuing to play for them. There's multiple coaches on the staff. I can think of tight ends coach Lunda Wells, wide receivers coach Robert Prince, secondary coach Al Harris. There are multiple guys that are quote-unquote players' coaches that these guys are continuing to fight for.
Speaking of coaches, Nick, if the Cowboys last offseason had decided we're keeping Dan Quinn, we're letting Mike McCarthy go, we were talking about it yesterday, considering you know the offensive minds that Dan's brought in at his last two stops as head coach, do you think they could have staved off this negative momentum, or would they be in a better spot moving forward?
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. I guess I hadn't thought of that one specifically. I think it could have been a little bit more interesting. I think you could have seen maybe a bigger focus on the defensive side of the ball going into the offseason. I also wonder how the linebacker position maybe would have shaped out without Mike Zimmer in the building, though, because obviously that would have resulted in him not being the DC. So I think certain personnel decisions would have been different. And then also, as far as offense goes, would it have been a more creative play caller? Would it have required this team to be a little bit more creative with the personnel decisions they made over the offseason on the offensive side of the ball? Did it get these guys signed quicker, knowing that there's a little bit more stability in their head coach moving forward, you know, whether it be a Dak or a CD over the offseason? But, you know, if ands or buts, unfortunately, those things are not true, because this team's looking at 3-7, and you look at Dan Quinn, and that's a 7-4 team over there in Washington.
Hey, Nick, you know, you're such a big part of the draft show and what we do, you know, during that time period. And I know you've already started looking at guys. Is there, you know, with the Cowboys potentially, a top 10 pick, is there a position that you're feeling really good about of the first three or four guys that you've looked at that you're saying, okay, if Dallas were to go this direction, you know, there's going to be quality? I kind of feel that way about this defensive tackles that I've seen so far with, you know, with the Mason Grahams and the Kenneth Gant, Grants and guys like that, Harmon from Oregon. I feel pretty good about what I've seen from these tackles. Is that a position you're looking at, or is there something, another area you feel a lot better at?
Yeah, are you asking top 10 specifically?
Yeah, just where Dallas, I mean, just as a position as a whole, that, you know, my first four or five guys I've looked at, boy, I really feel like that, man, these defensive tackles are pretty damn good. Or, man, I don't get the feeling the offensive tackles are that good like we've seen in the past. So I just didn't know if there's a position that you've already seen that Dallas could use that you feel good about potentially in the top 10.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of defensive tackles that I think could make their way into that conversation. I think at the end of the day, the only one that could get drafted in the top 10 is probably Mason Graham. Yeah. I am looking at Walter Nolan out of Ole Miss as well. I think he's a guy that could also rise, especially during the draft process. I don't know about necessarily top 10, but I really like this defensive tackle class. And if this personnel department feels like it's a deep class, then maybe that's not a position that they jump at top 10, and maybe a position group that they circle back in the second round, specifically whenever I kind of talk about, you know, position groups being deep and not being deep. I look at the receiver position. We've gotten so used to over the last decade, you know, these receivers having so much value in the fourth, fifth, sixth round. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think if you want a receiver, you better go get them early. And so I wonder if that factors into Dallas's draft conversations too, even as early as the first round. You know, if a guy like Teteroa McMillan out of Arizona or Luther Burden out of Missouri is available there, if they're picking at 8 or 9, is that a guy that they go grab instead? I don't know if I'm in that conversation. You know, if it were me, I'm using my first 3 picks on solidifying these trenches, but I could understand the argument behind going and getting a skilled guy to help out this offense too.
It's Nick Harris, Star Telegram. Now, how about runner? Are you looking at it like, you know, we're needing whatever we can get here in skill position, and a running game could make us a wild card team next year? Or are you thinking, man, let's just roll with Rico and wait one more year while we develop till we, you know, start that running back clock maybe going into 2026? Are you playing that one way or the other?
Man, I feel like if they don't get one running back, even two in this draft, I think we will continue to be looking around like, what's going on?
Yeah.
This is a draft I feel like you have to go get at least one running back, just because I'm really starting to like the depth of this running back class. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at guys like Kyle Manungai out of Rutgers, Jordan James out of Oregon. These are guys that could potentially be available on day 3, where I feel like if you put those two guys into the draft last year, these are day 2 picks that are contending with, you know, the Marshawn Lloyds and the Blake Corums are going in the third round. So I think you have to come away with at least one running back, but wouldn't surprise me if it's a 0-5 situation where they go and get multiple.
Yeah, do that double dip. I mean, I was looking at Travion Henderson from Ohio State. Like, dude, you should have come out last year. You'd have been drafted probably in the second or third round. Yeah. I don't know now with the group this year. But I wanted to ask you about the prime rumors at Colorado that popped out this week with the playmaker talking about it and Shador. I mean, what'd you make of all that? Do you think that Deion is more likely to stay at Colorado, or would he dip his toe in the NFL water?
Yeah, I still have a lot of sources back in my college days and been talking with him quite a bit over the last couple of weeks just about various things. And Deion feels very comfortable about what he's building over there in Boulder. And from the people I've talked to, both in the Cowboys building and in the college landscape, they feel like Deion's building for his future out in Boulder. But, you know, as with any coaching decision or any decision that coaches make whenever they bounce from programs, they will always make it seem like they're there for the future until they're not. And that's not necessarily an indictment on Deion, more so an indictment on the coaching industry, especially in the college landscape. But he did just land a high 4-star/low 5-star quarterback in Julian Lewis out of Carrollton, Georgia. That's a guy that he worked the entire recruiting cycle to flip from USC, finally was able to make it happen last week. He's starting to solidify some guys. He's got a receiver out of North Shore down in Houston, Quanell Faircon Jr. That's another guy that he's been recruiting really hard to make sure he stays in the class. So, you know, he's been putting in the legwork from a recruiting perspective, and I think that's to build the future post Shador and post Travis Hunter.
How good's Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, he's been great. I think it's certainly a rookie of the year type guy for me. Yeah, that would be my vote right now. As far as what he brings to that offense, it's been awesome, but I also got to give credit to Cliff Kingsbury too, because he's added a level of creativity to his packaging that I think we didn't even necessarily see in Arizona when he was using Kyler Murray early in his career. I think he's making Jaden Daniels a better quarterback, but I think more importantly, Jaden Daniels is making Cliff Kingsbury a better play caller.
You mentioned building in the trenches. I wonder what you make of these young offensive linemen, Richards and Guyton, you know, specifically. Are you doing any musical chairs in the offseason? Where are we long-term with Terrence Steele? Like, how much does this offensive lineman need attention?
Yeah, I think this is going to have to be something that takes a really big intention over the offseason from the personnel department. They got to look at this entire picture and be like, okay, what is our best 5 that we can put out there to make this the best unit possible? And I think the Terrence Steele situation is obviously tough. Whenever you look at the last 2 years and how those numbers have compared to what he was like before the ACL injury, the pressures he's allowed, the run stops that he's allowed, and is it a conversation where they have to look around and be like, is this a contract that we are willing to eat? And if they are, then I think there's a situation where you could go draft a guy in the first round at tackle, move Tyler Guyton out to the right side, and, you know, start to work those musical chairs around so that you don't have to use musical chairs in the middle of the season. Because I think if they continue to roll out with these guys that they have right now, it's only going to cause more problems.
Nick, thank you so much, man. Encyclopedia of football data. We salute you. We look forward to our next conversation.
I really appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a great one.
Cheers. Star Telegram is where you'll find him. Must follow on X there. Cowboys reporter Nick Harris here in the G-Bag Nation. Well, Chuck, the top 10's coming up, buddy.
Yeah, we had Daniel Jones and his tenure with the Giants today. Who are the top 10 worst quarterbacks in NFL history? That's next in the Nate.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coconut cream.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you give me apple... Yeah. Provided there's vanilla ice cream, I'm in on that.
All right. Second and 10, Prescott back. Little swing pass on the right side, a screen for Dowdle. Two great blocks, 10, 5, and he streaks in. It's a Thanksgiving Day touchdown for Rico Dowdle.
Yes, sir. And that Cowboys replay brought to you by Ciroc. Please drink responsibly. It's time for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 420. You know he loves the sound of a Cowboys touchdown. That's got the Wooly Bully fired up here in studio on a football Friday. It's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org, and the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen if you or a loved one is injured in a car truck wreck. Call the Frankels and get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Hit frankaffirm.com. Here he is, Zach with an H. You're Wooly Bully.
It was great to be reminded watching Kevontae Turpin just race to the end zone, what it felt like to score a touchdown again. It gave me some warm fuzzies for a second, and then it quickly went away, and I continued to watch how the rest of the game unfolded, but... Yeah, the touchdowns, like, cherish them. Cherish them right now because you don't know if they're coming again. Whew, it's been a rough few weeks.
You're basically Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That's if you want a visual to think of your offense.
No doubt.
As.
No doubt. All right, let's talk quarterback, shall we? 877-881-1053. Who's the worst quarterback you've ever seen play in the National Football League? I'll get to the top 10 worst quarterbacks. Now, I do have to pay off on the Jameis Winston audio. This was post-game. Now, Jameis at one point probably considered a bust in the first round as well since things didn't work out in Tampa Bay. But he's carved out a nice NFL career. He's one of the best backups in the NFL right now. And he's must-watch television. This was his description of playing in the snow.
Man, you know, it really was amazing. Like, I was just praying on the sideline because that fourth quarter, it really was like it was a whole paradigm shift. Like, we were playing so well offensively, and then bang, bang, back-to-back drives with turnovers. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. Like, this is really an NFL's film moment. The snow starts pouring down. It starts getting – like, my feet started getting heavy because I'm squishing through the snow. And, man, it was so good. And it was so great to end up getting that win.
I want to be able to channel just the joy that Jameis has in that moment forever. You know, and he really is at all times, it seems like, just super happy. But you could tell he was like a kid in a candy store right there playing in that snow game. And he had some amazing moments.
Oh, he did, dude. I mean, he had a couple of throws. I mean, even Russell had a couple of throws, like where it was on the move in the snow, having to be dialed with it. But that drive where he's throwing it to the tight ends, just throwing it up to him.
The Njoku touchdown with his device hanging on the helmet.
After Njoku drops the touchdown, and you're like, oh my gosh, Njoku, you're doing the shirtless baby oil flex before the game, and now you're going to drop a game-winning touchdown.
Yeah.
And then he totally redeems himself on the two-point conversion. There was a lot of awesome plays last night. That was a lot of fun.
It was back and forth. I loved both teams just switching out quarterbacks at times, like Dorian Thompson Robinson's coming in. I didn't really understand that one on first down. But
I was thinking maybe because that was when Winston had the sack fumble and maybe he got banged up or something on that particular play. But I didn't understand third and four. Here comes Justin Fields and you're throwing a deep ball down the sideline. Like
puzzling.
That's only to run the football for Justin Fields. If you're throwing the deep ball down the sideline, you don't want anybody else other than Russell Wilson.
No, agreed. All right. Worst quarterbacks in NFL history. Got a lot of texts already. Nathan Peterman seemed to be like a consensus answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the last name helps. Like, you never forget the Peter man and what he did being just god-awful. I mean, the interceptions, it was hilarious. And there's been a handful of those guys. I think the latest version of Deshaun Watson
is
right up there with the worst quarterbacking in football history.
Deshaun Kizer, you know, a lot of Cleveland quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I think you can put him in there. But it's like the worst, you know, recognizable name. I don't know if I've ever seen anything worse than DiNucci.
We got some DiNucci text. Oh, wow.
That was bad.
Wow. I'm not going to shame.
Now, I don't know if the text is going to do this to my guy, but about 15 years ago, Deadspin did an article on the worst quarterbacks ever. And number one on this list, Wolchuk, was he played 16 games. He started 7 of them. He somehow won 2 of them while completing 44% of his passes for an average of 66 yards per game. Okay. He ended his career with 5 touchdowns and 12 picks. And now he does radio play by play here on The Fan with Brad Sham.
It was?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Wow, babe.
Wow, dude.
You know what?
Now, there have been a lot worse quarterbacks on rosters.
Yeah, and I think that this list will probably, like, some of the when you didn't get a big sample size, I think they're giving you a break. But, yeah I think that's, I mean, Clint Sterner was bad. Drew Henson was bad. Chad Hutchinson was bad. I mean, that whole crew was rough. Hey, Quincy had a good year.
Quincy had a moment.
It's not your fault, Brian. You didn't have 2 first-round picks to work with.
Oh, man, it was awful. It
wasn't your fault.
I mean, just you named every one of them. I mean, it's just you close your eyes, and it was, you know, and you think about the drafts of that time, and there were players available. Tom Brady was a 6th-round pick, you know, and we had a 5th-round grade on him, and you're sitting there thinking, you know, where was Tom Brady on that board? I mean, that just shows you the fate sometimes of the NFL draft, that you evaluate players, you think you have them right, they're wrong. And, you know, man, the quarterback position was that right there was as bad a stretch. And I'd been with some great quarterbacks. I was on a staff with Favre.
Yeah.
With Mark Brunell, Ty Detmer, Kurt Warner. Those were our 4 quarterbacks at one time. You know,
that's loaded.
You didn't know Warner was the second best.
Yeah, Kurt Warner was. You know what? He was incredible. But he you know, I would tell the story about him. And if you watch his movie, he never wanted to go and take a rep. But these quarterbacks, man, that you talk about a huge blind spot for those 3 years when we were doing stuff. Yeah. Worst one I've ever seen was Heath Shuler from the.
Okay. Heath's on here.
Is he on that list?
Yeah, he is.
He's the worst one, and the Commanders drafted him.
Yeah, Heath.
He was a very high pick. He was the worst quarterback that I've seen.
Here's a couple of the honorable mentions. Joey Harrington.
He was another bad one.
He was bad.
Yeah.
But he did play a mean piano.
Yeah, he did.
Rick Norton.
He was with the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, 1-10 career record. Yeah. His touchdown to interception ratio is 7 of 30.
Rick Myers was pretty bad, too.
That is so bad.
Yeah.
Number 10, worst quarterbacks of all time, Andrew Walther
With the Raiders.
Yeah.
Man, he had a 3 of 16 touchdown interception ratio, was 2 and 7.
Yeah.
He was really bad. He threw 13 interceptions, fumbled the ball 13 times while leading his team to a 2 and 6 record. He was done after 3 seasons. 9 is David Klingler.
That's the University of Houston. He was, yeah, Cincinnati Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
The Cincinnati Bengals are on this list a lot.
I bet.
Dawson, you remember a guy, you're
Akili Smith.
Akili Smith was bad. Remember Jack Thompson?
Yeah.
Jack Thompson, he was picked in the 79 draft ahead of Phil Simms and Joe Montana.
Wow.
Oh, no.
He was a 3rd overall pick, and I think he was he won 4 games his entire career. 4-17, I think, is what he was.
Jeez, we got Orlovsky being texted in. Yeah, Orlovsky was bad.
Yeah.
Number 8 is Chris Winkie. 2-18 record.
I think he won his first 2 games and then lost 18 straight after that.
Wow. Okay. Dude. So Winkie won his first start as a rookie, managed to lose 17 consecutive games as a starter.
Yeah.
Including a gap between starts that went from 02 to 06. That's unreal.
That's hilarious, dude.
7 was Frank Trapuka?
Frank Trapuka.
Trapuka.
Yeah. Frank Trapuka. He was
Trapuka.
Frank Trapuka, if you go to the I think, is he on the Wall of Fame at 2 places? He might be with Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
On the Wall of Fame.
Denver.
Yeah, his son was Kelly Trapuka that was a pro basketball player.
Oh, I thought I recognized the name. Seattle Supersonics.
Yeah, Kelly Trapuka.
He threw a franchise record 34 interceptions.
Yeah.
In one season?
Most of a single season in league history.
Yeah.
Sure did.
That was when it was like a 12-game season.
He's on the Wall of, like he's in the Ring of Honor. If you go to.
How's he on this list? What? And a ring.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he was 17-34-1.
Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor guy.
Man.
For what team again?
Broncos.
He was the Broncos have him in the 49.
Ring of Honor for that?
Yeah.
That's worse than Arthur Blank putting himself in the Falcons Ring of Honor.
He did lead the league, I guess, that final season with the Broncos in completions, attempts, yards, but then also the interceptions.
And interceptions.
Yeah. Yeah. Did go to 1 Pro Bowl, actually. So, yeah, number 18 jersey, retired in Denver, then unretired so Peyton Manning could wear it, then retired again. That's crazy. That dude doesn't really deserve it, it sounds like. 6 is Matt Leinart.
Ooh. Oh, geez.
That was a rough time with the Cardinals.
Way worse than Matt Leinart.
8-10, 15-21 touchdown interception ratio.
That's just kind of crappy.
He was bad, yeah. 10th overall pick.
Expectations. But, I mean, you've had Blaine Gabberts and Josh Rosens and Blake Bortles.
Yeah. Ooh.
Heath Shuler's 5.
Yeah. One of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen.
SEC Player of the Year out of Tennessee.
Tennessee.
He goes 3rd overall and then went 1-7 as a rookie.
Yeah. Never to play again.
Shout out to Heath Shuler, whatever his name is. Damn, Broadus.
Heath Shuler became a congressman or senator in the state of North Carolina.
My man said the worst quarterback you've ever seen. You've seen a lot of quarterbacks.
A lot of bad quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Shout out to his family, whoever's listening.
We love you.
God bless y'all.
Was he a senator from North Carolina? Am I right about this, Dawson? Were you looking that up?
So he found his lane. He found a better lane.
He was like
North Carolina. He's a U.S. representative guy.
Yes.
Congressman.
There we go.
Not quite a senator yet.
I'm sorry.
4 is Kim McKilkin?
McKilkin.
Huh?
2-5, 4 of 29 touchdown interception ratio.
McCauley's big brother.
Maybe it's McCulkin. Maybe. He completed just 39% of his passes. Threw 1 pick for every 9 passes he let fly.
Wow.
That's
dude.
Terrible. 3 is Akili Smith.
Yeah.
2 is Jamarcus Russell.
There you go. Ellison, you.
I need to go back and look at just how bad his numbers were. I mean, I know he's a bust and he was supposed to be awesome and he wasn't, but.
Yeah.
Were his numbers truly just that disgusting?
So it's like Ryan Leaf is going to be number 1.
He threw 23 career interceptions, fumbled 25 times.
25 times?
He was super mobile.
I mean, he must have had giant hands. How was he dropping the football?
I don't know. He did come to Camp North with 300 pounds as a quarterback. But number 1 is Ryan Leaf.
Oh, that's what takes
him a bunch. He was bulking up. He was ready to just take that punishing in the pocket.
Yeah. Ryan Leaf. Yeah. What did Ryan Leaf tell us that he was on? He was hallucinating and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. He's like grading on the curve of me being on crack while I was dropping back to pass. Yeah. He feels like he was actually pretty good.
Shouldn't be number 1. I think we could probably put other quarterbacks up there if that was the case. We got some texts for Eric Crouch, Jared Lorenzen, Chad Kelly, Curtis Painter.
Curtis Painter.
Curtis Painter was bad.
Kyle Bowler.
Oh, Kyle Bowler. Yeah, that was awful.
Doug Hodges.
J.P. Lawson.
Lossman. Yeah,
that was another first rounder from the Bills.
The Bills, yeah.
They traded with us to get that pick.
That's right.
Yeah, you fleeced him, huh?
Yeah, we got him.
Yeah.
It's crazy how many bad quarterbacks. I mean, it's such a hard job that
Is
these
that
guys
the
can get out there
Steven
and just
Jackson?
Look so stupid.
That's the passing of Steven Jackson, yes.
Yeah.
And we ended up, that pick was Spears.
It worked out.
Yeah, worked out well.
I did love me some Julius Jones. There's your top 10.
Thank you, Wolchuk. Top 10 at 420 every afternoon here in the G-Bag Nation. When we come back, it's time for the C-Note. Would the Cowboys have interest in old Danny Dimes, DJ? He's going through waivers right now, and we'll get an answer from the Cowboys on that and more. Football's finest coming up at the top of the hour here on The Fan. Yeah, buddy. Thank you, Lucius. G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. You know, we are just 35 minutes now from what you're drinking, what you're thinking. We want to hear from you. Okay. Had a lot of Cowboys talkers today, Steven, Mike, a lot of news being made. We did find out Zach Martin not expected to play Sunday. Could miss the Thanksgiving game as well, right?
Yeah. Really banged up.
Jake Ferguson ruled out.
Yes, sir.
He's concussed.
Concussed.
Must be a pretty bad concussion there, so hopefully Jake starts feeling better soon. Diggs and Tyler Smith are questionable. Are we feeling pretty good about both those guys, though?
I think the questionable ones are pretty good, yeah.
And then Deron Bland on track to make his season debut, but he, along with Nealon and Cooks, are all going to be like on a pitch count situation?
Pitch count, yes, sir.
How much can, you know, the two-corner combination change the look of the defense? I know the Eagles secondary got a lot better, and our guest yesterday said Philly might have the best defense in the NFL. I'm not hoping for any of that kind of a turnaround, but I mean, the ability to take the ball away from those two guys could totally, I think, shift the dynamics to, hey, we could be a bad defense, but if we can get a little bit of pressure with Micah and the ball skills of these guys, you know, multi-takeaway games are back on the table.
It'll help because of how in this particular game, the Commanders will throw the ball vertically. And Terry McLaurin will go down the field, and you got a quarterback that's not afraid to get the ball down the field to him. You know, they really struggled at the left cornerback spot. It was just, you know, McQuamu, they were all trying, you know, Carson all trying, you know, Butler all trying. It just, you know, you had a Pro Bowl corner out there that hadn't played at all this year.
Yeah.
And I think it's affected the way the defenses play.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to sit there and say that's the only reason, because they don't tackle well enough. You know, they don't stop the run.
They've been that for over a decade.
It's been a problem. I mean, Dan Quinn's got the same problem at the Commanders. You know, his secondary is not as good as what he had in Dallas.
You asked the question an hour ago, Brian, what's the path to victory look like?
Yeah.
Could we have a rookie wall situation here with their quarterback? Jaden Daniels' stats coming down very significantly in his last four starts.
You know what? I think they've played better defenses looking at the tape, and I also feel like he's hurt, or he was hurt, put it that way.
Dan said this week he's not, but he has been hurt.
He has been dealing, you know, his willingness just to take off and run. Now get ready for Sunday. Just when you feel like that, oh, wait, he's banged up, he's not going to run, and he's playing in the pocket.
Here's 70 yards rushing.
Exactly. Here's a 26.
Couple touchdowns.
26-yard run when you, you know, Overshown comes on the blitz, misses him. Now it's a 26-yard run.
Yeah, probably rookie of the year Daniels reemerges this week against this Cowboys defense.
Yeah, everybody seems to like, all of a sudden, Dallas is kind of your get-well game.
Yeah.
Okay, Stephen Jones this afternoon or this morning on San Antonio radio was asked, do you have interest in former Giants quarterback Daniel Jones? I think we're in good shape, he said. We think Cooper gives us the best chance to win. Certainly, we still want to see some. We'll kind of see how the season goes. We still want to see Trey and like what he brings to the table. Then, of course, long-term, we know the commitment Dak has.
I kind of felt like that I was hearing some whispers that they were closer to getting towards Trey playing full-time, and then all of a sudden it's 3 games in 11 days bit. But, you know,
you should see some of the decisions he makes. You're like, what's the point? Well, he's not good.
Yeah, what's the point with Cooper Rush at times?
No, you're right.
You mean, yeah. the threat of being dropped back and then Guyton doesn't get his guy, but you spin out of it, and now you're running up the field for, you know, another 20-yard gain. That's to me. I've seen what I've seen with Cooper Rush. That your offense is going to be maxed out at 17 points with Cooper Rush playing football.
Yeah, by that.
Yeah, and it might be less with Lance playing, mm-hmm. but at least he gives me the element of a play. You know, he gives me the element of making a play when you need.
I mean, he's big and strong, and his 40 time is good. But when I see him out there, I don't see a guy that's like, you know, victimizing the defense or setting up the defense with the nuances of his running style. I see a guy trying to survive. And unless you can pimp the defense with that throwing action, am I throwing, am I running, I'm cutting, I'm gone. Yeah. You know, unless you have that ability, that spatial awareness, I just don't think it's going to work. But I'm with you. I want to see it.
I just kind of don't feel like that they use him in that way that you would like to see, where you're talking about the run, you know, where you get in a formation where you inside fake it and then you get a crash in and now he takes off. I can't tell you how many times I watch film and like – crash in and Dak hands it off inside to Daddle for a gain of 2, where if he could just pulled it and run, it's a gain of 12 and he gets down and now you keep going. You know, you're punishing the defense that way, which is keep running like that.
Right, and, like you saw a bunch of picks in preseason, but you saw the 46-yard touchdown run.
Yeah.
So Cleveland gets the win last night. They join the 3-win club. You're on 3. Carolina's on 3. The Jets, Patriots on 3 wins. But
they play each other, too.
Yeah. You have just the Jags, Titans, Giants, and Raiders now stuck on 2 wins. Those are your worst 4 teams. So, you know, hopefully you lose to the Giants on Thanksgiving, and they join the 3-win team as well. And, you know, the top 5 pick is still a single-digit percentage possibility. But the way this Cowboys team has played, I would expect them to end up with a top 5 pick, you know, based on the way that they are playing and looking at the schedule. Unless something turns around, like we were just talking about the Bland and Diggs effect or something like that. Okay, Steven on asked about getting return on investment for Trey Lance. Yeah, we'd do that again. He's a top-tier pick, a guy we had at the top. Dak was coming up for contract. We wanted to take a look at a good young talent. I mean, that's just...
I really believed in my heart of hearts they were going to let this thing ride. I really thought, man, this thing, every day that went by, I was thinking they're not going to sign this guy. I'm talking about
Dak.
Yeah. And then I would love to know what day, what meeting, who flipped that or who stood up on the table. You know, we've seen Will McClay stand up for Mozzie Smith in the draft room.
I think Dak came back to them. I think Dak and his agent were on solid ground thinking we're going to command 65 or 70. And the Cowboys, probably the vibe you were getting, had no interest in doing that deal.
Yeah, his answer kind of made me think that too, because he said like Dak could have really gone and seen what he could get elsewhere, but he decided to go ahead and sign. So now that we signed Dak, then he talked about how it's tough to really keep Trey Lance even after that, because Trey probably wants to go out there and see what's out there. But it was a leverage trade. That's what it was. And he admitted that. It was a trade basically just to have another option in case things didn't work out with Dak. The problem was it never made sense to begin with, because you had both guys leaving in free agency anyway, or their contracts were up at the same time. There wasn't like a bridge year where you could really get a good look at Trey.
Something just kind of clicked in my mind. Do you think they're not playing Trey Lance because they want to re-sign him at a lower price as a backup?
Maybe.
That if they play him and he plays well, they're not going to be able to afford him.
Yeah, I find it hard for anybody to have an expectation that he is going to play well. I think all you're going to do ultimately, you know, is just he's going to go out there and not be a good player.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, I kind of feel like that they're looking at this like, you know what, we saw some
things. Yeah, they see him in practice every day, all that stuff. Yeah,
and all of a sudden it's like, you know, if we play him and he plays well, we could lose this guy. Whereas if we don't play him, and we kind of know about him, we could sign him for a cheap backup role next year.
Well, if I was Trey and I knew that, I wouldn't want to sign here anyway.
Cooper Rush is going to be a free agent. So
trade him out for Cooper Rush, but really nobody wants to sign Trey Lance. You've made his stock so low by not playing him. It might be.
I think you make it lower by playing him. I think like I want to see him play just for the unknown and just some excitement and like it's something different here. But I think all he's going to do is just lower his value with every snap that he takes.
Final note, a couple hours ago, we asked Stephen Jones if they were thinking about changing play caller at all. Is it a topic internally? One word answer to that was no. So we shall see. I think some of these, they're just trying to get through without offending anybody and without creating any big fires.
That's why I asked the question. I appreciate you following up on that. But man, I was like, you know, how do you approach that with your coach?
Yeah.
When you want, you want to see somebody else, but he's fighting for his life. You go in there and say, hey, listen, I told you what I would do about Trey Lance.
Yeah.
I'd say, okay, you don't want to play him. You're fired. We're going to have another guy in here doing that.
What's next, Chief?
Football's finest. We got big injury news for some NFC teams. Ticket prices that won't be making Jerry happy. Plus, Devontae Adams. Did you see that? He had time yesterday, folks. Next year in the nation.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.